And so thirdly and finally, he moves to another group, significant group in the community, slaves. We've done a lot on slavery, particularly when we did that beautiful little letter to Philemon, but also in other places I've done it with some length to you. You can recall that if you were here for that. But probably just a reminder, why were people... Slavery was part of the system everywhere. Jewish system, Greek system, Roman system, everybody's system. How did you become a slave? Mainly through war was one of the main reasons. There were economic things as well. You could go into slavery to help pay a debt or something like that. But on the whole, you might consider it that it's part of the lower jobs were done by people who were foreigners and were slaves. So there are a lot of slaves, and there are obviously slaves among the Christians. And he starts by talking about slaves who, presumably, their master is not a Christian. And then he talks about slaves whose master is a Christian. So what's he say about them? Well, let all who are under the yoke of slavery. Paul's not setting out to change the whole social system. Why isn't he? Because it never would have occurred to him to be able to do it. It's so vast. And also, possibly because of the reasons you brought up earlier, Paul's thinking... Paul has a very sharp focus, and that is on the gospel, on people living the gospel. If people live the gospel, every institution will change. But if you don't live the gospel, you can change the institution and just become something just as bad afterwards. So it's a matter, I don't mean it's private or personal in that sense of individual salvation, no, he's very much about society. But he is about living the gospel, and everything will follow from that. And that's true. So the advice he gives to men and women in marriage will change the institution of marriage. The advice he gives to slaves here will change the institution of slavery. And you can see in the, if it's followed through. So, but Paul isn't about changing the system. He's about changing lives, community life, the way we treat each other, which will, of course, change the system. He talks about the yoke of slavery, and I'll just remind you there, look at the other yoke that they're all under, and I'll just use that image from Matthew's Gospel where Jesus says, "Come to me, all you that are weary, carrying heavy burdens, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you." Among the rabbis, Pharisees, rabbi might be a later term, but probably not, among the teachers of the people, the Torah was called a yoke. And Jesus is saying, no, take my yoke, not the Torah. Take mine and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. For my yoke, it's usually translated this way, my yoke is easy. But the image is really, my yoke fits easily. It's to do with, you know, a yoke can either be badly strapped and jar and be very, you can't pull the load because it's loose, or it can be really trim and fitting the animal perfectly so that there's no wastage like we do ourselves. So that's the image here. My yoke, I would translate it, fits easily. It's made for you. It's right for you. It's a love yoke. So, and my burden is light. So the burden is light because the yoke is there. So these slaves are, yes, they are slaves, but they're slaves of Christ, and they have another yoke to carry. And remember that their life as Christians transcends their social status, and that's the point he's making to them here. As he said in his earliest letter, Galatians 3:28, there's no longer Jew or Greek. Of course there is, but that's no longer actually relevant to the final decisions people make. That's not the key difference. There's no longer slave or free. There are slave and there are free. People have never been slaves and freed men. And remember, slavery in those days was not an institution forever. The normal thing would be, after a certain period, I don't know what it was, 10 years maybe, of slavery, you would then be freed. Because they'd want a younger slave if there were enough around. So freed, people freed from slavery was terribly common in society. And so there's no longer slave or free, says Paul. There's no longer male or female. They're not the things you look at when you start to decide what goes on. No, all of you are one in Christ Jesus. That's the key insight. And if we get that right, and we call on each person with their beautiful gifts of the Spirit to contribute to the community, that's where we start. And that's what really matters. Well, all of that is background to this. So he says to these slaves, let all who are under the yoke of slavery regard their masters as worthy of all honour. This is the beginning point. They may not be worthy of honour, some of them. And they may have to revolt against them. They may have to run away. They may have to disobey and be end up martyrs. Who knows? But don't start from that assumption. He doesn't want the slaves to be rebellious, disobedient. Otherwise, the whole of Christianity will get a bad name. And they shouldn't be living like that anyhow. And that'll certainly not attract their masters to think, gee, these Christian slaves are really lovely, these women and these men. They're very loving and very loyal and very prayerful and very good and very honest, and I wonder what they've got. And then a lot of the masters would think, oh, Christianity, and be attracted to it and become Christians. That's what Paul's wanting. So that the name of God and the teaching may not be blasphemed. That's why he wants them to be like this. So they don't say, huh, what kind of a God have you got? Your behavior, you don't do what you're told, you're lazy, you're rebellious, you're all that. No, he doesn't want that happening. And that text, that's actually a quote from Romans 2:24, but it's a quote from Isaiah. The name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. Paul says in Romans 2:24. And many people in our world today are anti-Christian because of the behaviour of Christians. So that's the problem. Now, that's a general statement about conversion, really. Now, some of you have got believing masters. Those who have believing masters, so he's not saying a believing master can't have slaves. It'd be like saying a believing Christian can't have anyone employed in their business. I mean, today, employers and employees, I mean, we take it for granted, but in 1,000 years' time, they might think, fancy having some people employers and some employees. What kind of a system do they have? I don't know what they'll say, but we take it for granted that that's the way it is. They took this for granted. Those who have believing masters mustn't be disrespectful of them on that ground, take advantage of their kindness or their thing to just do what you like. No, they are members of the one church. Don't do that. Serve them all the more, since those who benefit by their service are believers and beloved. So be even better because of that, because of the fact that you share faith.